Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 335, side 2. The title is Walkin' the Snake, part 2. This is being recorded on November 11th, 2001. The title, of course, is a reference to the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk, in which the Third Reich and the SS go underground at the end of World War II, build up an enormous capital organization, infiltrate the United States Army, and then, following a biological warfare attack on the United States, which does a great deal of damage to the country, martial law is declared, and they take over the United States. This, quote, novel, unquote, which I believe, like Mein Kampf and like the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk, also published by the publishing arm of the National Alliance, about which we'll say more in a minute, I believe that this is far more than a novel. I believe this is actually a blueprint for what I call the Underground Reich has done and is doing. More about some of the financial underpinnings of the September 11th events and things related to that. Now, in the first half of the broadcast, we discussed the fact that some of the venture capital that one of the major capitalizers, I should say, of Larry Silverstein, who leased the World Trade Center, who had just leased it a few weeks before the attack. And by the way, there was a lot of movement, as I call it, in the summer of 2000. Larry Silverstein leases the World Trade Center right before the attack. A man who I believe is an inside player for what I call the Underground Reich from the first Bush administration, Robert Mueller, was appointed head of the FBI. J.H. Hatfield, the author of the book Fortunate Son, died under strange circumstances. The Saudis changed intelligence chiefs the week before the attack, and then a couple of days before the attack, before they were scheduled to have military maneuvers with the United States, they canceled those. A lot of interesting movement in the summer of 2000. Larry Silverstein, again, had just leased the World Trade Center, taken out a 99-year lease. No insurance policies had been formally written. That is now the subject of litigation, and Larry Silverstein has also gotten protection from the United States, courtesy of the bailout bill that was passed by the United States government, and for which, or on whose behalf, Larry Silverstein had lobbyists working on his behalf. Now, one of the major capitalizers for Larry Silverstein was the UBS Warburg. UBS stands for Union Bank of Switzerland, which merged with the House of Warburg, a very powerful and wealthy industrial and financial family with very strong connections to the Third Reich and to the IG Farben Nazi chemical cartel. The Warburgs had branches in Germany, London, and the United States. The American branch had a director on the board of the American subsidiary of IG Farben. Now, we're going to return to the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, authored by Paul Manning, published in hardcover by Lyle Stewart, copyright 1981 by the Manning family. Paul Manning covered the air war in Europe along with Edward R. Murrow for CBS, then did the same thing in Japan and broadcast the surrenders of Japan and Germany on the CBS radio network, then spent much of his post-war career researching the remarkable and deadly Bormann organization, had his career destroyed and ultimately his son murdered. We've talked about that in other broadcasts available either from Spitfire and or for download on Real Audio or streaming by sister station WFMU. Now about UBS, Union Bank of Switzerland, now UBS Warburg, we're going to read as follows. The Union Bank of Switzerland is very, very closely connected not only with IG Farben, but also, by the way, with the financing of the Bin Laden family, as we looked at in For the Record program number 334, both Deutsche Bank, one of the top German financial institutions, and Citicorp, formerly National Citibank, are very closely connected to the Bin Laden family and have helped to capitalize their operations. That, and again, in a New York Times story from 10/28/2001, excerpted in For the Record 334, The Protocols of the Elders of Oil. Now, of the capitalizer of Larry Silverstein's operations, which were conducted in conjunction with a subsidiary of General Motors, in which the Bormann Group also has heavy investments, we read as follows. Now, Interhandel is the holding company in which much of the IG Farben stock was registered. This was set up at the closing stages of World War II, and we discussed this in For the Record program number 292. So Interhandel is the Swiss-based holding company for much of IG Farben's assets. And the Union Bank of Switzerland was one of the major banks through which much of their operations were conducted. Much of IG Farben and the Bormann Group's post-war operations were conducted. There was a lawsuit brought by minority stockholders in IG Farben to get the assets of IG Farben returned by the alien property custodian. They had been confiscated in World War II. That's the reference to the lawsuit. Now, note Interhandel, again, the Swiss-based holding company for IG Farben stock, and the Union Bank of Switzerland. As the case dragged through the U.S. courts, Schmitz, that's Hermann Schmitz of IG Farben, would have Interhandel cosmetized even more. Charles Delos, past president of the Swiss Bankers Association, would be elected chairman, and the general manager of each of the big three Swiss banks would be appointed to the board. They would agree to this because the honor of Swiss banking and its principle of banking secrecy would be at stake. In addition, 25% of Interhandel stock would be registered in the name of Union Bank, whose manager, Dr. Alfred Schaefer, was of known integrity. The Swiss believed the association of such a man of high banking repute at Interhandel would impress American government authorities. But the German connection would still be there. Not only Hermann Schmitz, but also the banking connection of Union Bank of Switzerland, Dr. Schaefer's bank, and Deutsche Bank, which acted in concert on so many deals involving not only IG Farben, but also big Ruhr industrialists such as Thyssen AG, the largest steel maker in Germany. And I would add the Thyssen family business partners of the Busch family, as we've looked at in, among other programs, for the record number 273, B as in Busch, B as in Bormann. Continuing, in January of 1978, these two lead banks, Deutsche Bank, by the way, which helps capitalize the Bin Laden family, and UBS, now Union Bank, UBS Warburg, which capitalized Larry Silverstein. In January of 1978, these two lead banks, acting through the UBS DB Corporation, an American firm of the Union Bank of Switzerland and the Deutsche Bank of Germany, would be the financial advisors for Thyssen AG in its $275 million cash takeover of the Bud Company of Troy, Michigan, a leading U.S. manufacturer of auto components, truck trailers, and rail cars. UBS DB Corporation would also say that the West German companies it represented were showing a, quote, very substantial interest in all sorts of American ventures, including mergers and acquisitions. Now, UBS Warburg, again, one of the major capitalizers of Larry Silverstein, who leased the World Trade Center, who had just leased it weeks before the attacks. The insurance companies that figured to lose in that attack were companies whose stock was, according to some authorities, traded in rather suspiciously with insider short selling prior to the attacks. One of the firms implicated in that, at least being investigated by Swiss authorities, Altaqua or Nada Management, on whose board of directors sits Ahmed Huber, associate of Johann von Leers, associate of the NPD, and an apparent and also an associate of Al-Qaeda, and Altaqua being cited by the U.S. government as an alleged funding source for Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. Now, at the end of World War II, IG Farben, as we've seen in numerous broadcasts, was broken up into three main companies. One was the Hoechst, H-O-E-C-H-S-T, chemical company, which is now merged with Rhône Poulenc to become Aventis. And another was BASF, a major chemical company, and the other was the Bayer firm, known for aspirin. It also developed heroin. It also manufactured methadone. It developed methadone, which was a synthetic morphine developed prior to World War II to treat casualties. Methadone originally, as we saw in RFA 24, was called Dolefine, named in honor of Adolf Hitler. We're going to take a look now at a recent investment of Bayer, which are a recent product of Bayer, which has been tripling in sales due to the anthrax attacks in the United States. This, in turn, has helped to shore up Bayer's sagging financial interests. We're going to take a look now at the front page of the Los Angeles Times for Thursday, October 18th of 2001. This is an article by Charles Piller of the Los Angeles Times. It's headlined, Biotechnology stocks are gaining on anthrax scare. And it's subtitled Pharmaceuticals. Analysts caution investors against betting that the crisis will buoy such firms indefinitely. And skipping down, Bayer, parenthetically one of the companies that emerged from IG Farben, Bayer, the German maker of Cipro, the antibiotic of choice for anthrax infections, is tripling its output of the drug. And Bayer's stock price has risen by more than 33% since the anthrax outbreaks began. So Bayer, again, one of the member companies of the IG, one of the major companies in which one of the major companies associated with the Bormann Group, has experienced a 33% rise in stock because of the anthrax attacks and the enormous demand for its Cipro product, which is used to help combat anthrax. And bear in mind that UBS Warburg, the holder of 25% of the Interhandel stock, that's the holding company for IG Farben, one of the two major capitalizers of Larry Silverstein. And the IG chairman, as we looked at, was Hermann Schmitz, one of Bormann's mentors for putting together the Bormann Organization, turning back once again to Martin Bormann, Nazi in exile. Remember that GMAC is a mortgage financing subsidiary of General Motors. Turning to Martin Bormann, Nazi in exile, Schmitz's wealth, largely IG Farben bearer bonds, converted to the big three successor firms, parenthetically including Bayer, shares in Standard Oil of New Jersey equal to those held by the Rockefellers, General Motors, and other U.S. blue-chip industrial stocks, and the 700 secret companies controlled in his time by IG, as well as shares in the 750 corporations he helped Bormann establish during the last year of World War II, has increased in all segments of the modern industrial world. The Bormann Organization in South America utilizes the voting power of the Schmitz Trust, along with their own assets, to guide the multinationals they control as they keep steady the economic course of the fatherland. And so again, note the position of many of these Bormann-connected companies in some of the economic elements of components of the 9/11 attacks. Bayer's stock is soaring because of the anthrax attacks. Now, turning to the operational level and bearing in mind my hypothesis that I've been presenting over years, which is that Serpent's Walk is not just a novel but a blueprint. One of the key elements in Serpent's Walk, a biological warfare attack on the United States. Let's take a look now at the San Jose Mercury News of Wednesday, November 7th of the year 2001. This is an article headlined, Deadly Spores Were Made in U.S., FBI says, at Stateline, New York, and it reads in part, Assistant FBI Director Barry Maughan, M-A-W-N, said laboratory analysis had shown that the anthrax bacteria used in the recent spate of deadly letters were produced in the United States, the Boston Globe reported Tuesday. U.S. officials had previously said the kind of anthrax bacteria found in the tainted letters could have been produced in either the United States, Russia, or Iraq. Quote, It was made here, said Maughan, declining to elaborate. Maughan, who was overseeing the investigation into the anthrax cases, said there is no evidence to support theories that Iraq supplied the anthrax spores found in the letters tied to the 13 infections and 4 deaths. Bear in mind that in addition to the biological warfare attack in Serpent's Walk, the Underground Reich, in addition to putting together a huge economic organization and buying into the American opinion and forming media, infiltrates the U.S. Army. So apparently, at least according to some sources, the anthrax strain used in the attacks, which, by the way, were directed at the news media initially and Democrats, these spores appear to have come from the United States, according to many analysts. We're going to take a look now at the Wall Street Journal of Thursday, November 8th of the year 2001. This is an article by Antonio Regalado, R-E-G-A-L-A-D-O. It's headlined, The Scientists Probing Terror Anthrax Trace Microbes Family Tree. And skipping down, Dr. Smith, that's Timothy L. Smith and Keim. Is yet another, Paul Keim, another of the doctors researching the anthrax. Doctors Smith and Keim won't comment on their work in the investigation, but sources close to the research say the Arizona team determined that the anthrax bacteria from these different sites are indistinguishable and have made in the USA stamped all over them. The microbe is a descendant of some taken from a sick cow decades ago near Ames, Iowa, and thus dubbed the Ames strain. Investigators hope that identifying the strain will help pare the list of possible perpetrators. The Ames strain has been studied extensively by the U.S. military during the past two decades and has never been traced to Iraq or the former Soviet Union, lending support to theories that a homegrown bioterrorist is at work. Skipping down again, it also isn't clear whether the Ames strain was part of the secret U.S. biological weapons program to which President Nixon called a halt in 1969. Dr. Hugh Jones said that David Huxall, former head of the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases, told them it was. Dr. Huxall couldn't be reached for comment. Two scientists who were involved in the U.S. bioweapons program, Bill Patrick and Richard Spurzel, say they used a strain called Volume, V-O-L-L-U-M, not Ames. So apparently the Ames strain, according to many sources, was used in the BW research program in the United States. Other scientists say they used a strain called Volume, V-O-L-L-U-M. In terms of tracing where this comes from, bear in mind again that our intelligence community and our military are not a unified whole. There are many different elements, and I have hypothesized in connection with the 9-1-1 attacks a fifth column at work not only in the U.S. military, but also the intelligence community, and in Serpent's Walk, the Underground Reich infiltrates the U.S. military. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience who got this from New Scientist of October 24th of 2001. This article is headlined, The World's Number One Science, Anthrax Bacteria Likely to Be U.S. Military Strain, and it reads in part as follows. The bacteria used for the anthrax attacks in the U.S. is either the strain the U.S. itself used to make anthrax weapons in the 1960s or close to it. It is not a strain that Iraq or the former Soviet Union mass-produced for weapons. There have been charges over the past week that the sophistication of the anthrax suggests that it was produced with the backing of some government, such as Iraq. But neither the strain nor the physical form of the anthrax is particularly sophisticated, say bioweapons specialists. Last week, Tom Ridge, President Bush's Homeland Security Advisor, stated that the anthrax sent to Florida, NBC, and Senator Tom Daschle were all the same strain. An FBI spokesman in Florida confirmed that this was the Ames strain. But there has been confusion over what Ames means. The scientists analyzing the anthrax are comparing its DNA with a library of strains collected from all over the world. In this collection, the standard Ames strain is the one the U.S. used when it produced anthrax weapons, a program which ended in 1969. To be identified as Ames in the studies currently underway, the anthrax must either be the American military strain or one that's very similar. It is a good choice for a terrorist. Ames is more likely than other strains of anthrax to cause disease in animals immunized with a standard U.S. anthrax vaccine, which is now being given to U.S. troops. It also has proven virulence and is not traceable to one particular country, says Ken Alabeck, former head of the Soviet bioweapons program. The Soviets did not mass-produce Ames, says Alabeck. Iraq favored the Volume strain, which has been identified in samples from its Al-Hakam bacterial fermentation plant. The anthrax mass-produced for weapons in the U.S. was destroyed after 1969. But samples were kept in the U.S. and elsewhere. Quote, the South African collection had hundreds of different strains, Alabeck points out, and Wouter Bassin, former head of the South African bioweapons program, reportedly visited Libya after the fall of the apartheid government in 1994. I would add that the elder George Bush was in charge of both the Iraqgate and Irangate machinations, and as such, Iraq got quite a bit of its biowarfare capabilities from the U.S., including perhaps the Volume strain. I would also note that as we looked at in For the Record 317 and 324, there are links between Dr. Larry Creed Ford and the South African biowarfare program and elements of the CIA, and Larry Creed Ford, who committed suicide in 2000, also had apparently been in connection with right-wing terrorist and extremist groups. Larry Ford got mentioned in an article that was carried in the New York Times of Friday, November 2nd of 2001. This is an article by J.O. Thomas, headlined, Hate Groups, U.S. Groups Have Some Ties to Germ Warfare. And skipping down, and the police officers who were called to the home of Dr. Larry Creed Ford in Irvine, California, after his suicide on March 2nd, 2000, found an arsenal of automatic weapons and ammunition in his backyard and jars containing bacteria that caused typhoid and cholera in a refrigerator. South African officials said Dr. Ford had worked as a consultant to Project COAST, a biological weapons program run by the South African government from 1981 to 1992. And Project COAST, as we looked at in For the Records 317 and 324, was developing anthrax. Larry Creed Ford, with apparent links to right-wing extremist groups in this country, was involved with that and with elements of CIA. And I would also note that as we looked at in For the Record 317 and 324, the Bruderbund, basically an offshoot of the Third Reich and the Underground Reich, and an apparent underground post-apartheid offshoot of the Bruderbund called the Organisatie, the organization, continued to have ties to the biological warfare program in South Africa. There are also some interesting links between Islamic extremists in South Africa and Al-Qaeda. This is discussed in the Financial Times of Monday, October 22nd of the year 2001, article by James Lamont and Nicole Degli Innocenti in Johannesburg, headlined, South Africa Probes Transactions by Al-Qaeda. The South African authorities have unearthed transactions made by the Al-Qaeda terrorist network within the country's informal banking sector, Reserve Bank officials said at the weekend. Skipping down, a group calling itself the People Against Gangsterism and Drugs, or PAGOD, launched a bombing campaign against targets in Cape Town 3 years ago. PAGOD, along with its associate group Qibla, Q-I-B-L-A, is on the official U.S. list of terrorist organizations. And in an article that appeared on the World Wide Web, this is called Anti-Semitism Worldwide, this is South Africa. This is on the website www.tau.ac.il/anti-Semitism/ASW97-8, dated 11/10. Anti-Semitism in 1997 and 98, we find the following. Apparently, some of the South African Islamic extremist organizations, including PAGOD and Qibla, have been active. Again, they've been active in South Africa and have apparent propaganda links to Ahmed Huber, about whom we spoke in the first half. To a limited skipping down in this article, again, Anti-Semitism Worldwide, 1997 and 8, South Africa, to a limited degree, Muslim extremists have adopted Holocaust denial as a propaganda tool. In January, a guest speaker on the Islamic station Radio 786, the well-known Swiss Holocaust denier and convert to Islam, Dr. Ahmed Huber, made several anti-Semitic remarks, including a reference to, quote, the Holocaust swindle, unquote. So again, we will take up the subject of Ahmed Huber and the South African connections, perhaps connected to Larry Creed Ford and Project COAST, in future broadcasts. Bear in mind that Ahmed Huber was connected to the NPD, and the NPD in turn is strongly connected to the National Alliance, the publisher of Serpent's Walk. This is an article called Far-Right Violence Soars in Germany by Martin A. Lee from the San Francisco Bay Guardian of March 19th of 2001. The NPD's closest U.S. ally is Dr. William Pierce, head of the Neo-Nazi National Alliance and author of the notorious hate novel The Turner Diaries, which the FBI has called the blueprint for the Oklahoma City bombing. In 1998, Pierce traveled to Germany to attend the NPD's national convention. The leader of the NPD's youth wing, Alexander von Webenau, subsequently visited Pierce at his remote rural encampment in West Virginia. While there, Webinow spoke at an invitation-only conference hosted by the National Alliance. Pierce also published an interview with the NDP chief, Udo Voigt, end unquote. And we'll perhaps never find out exactly where the anthrax bacteria did come from. Let's conclude now with an article from the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, November 9th of the year 2001. This is a New York Times story by William Broad, David Johnston, Judith Miller, and Paul Zielbauer, headlined by the Chronicle, FBI Missteps in Anthrax Probe Alleged. And skipping down, last month, after consulting with the FBI, Iowa State University in Ames destroyed anthrax spores collected over more than 7 decades and kept in more than 100 vials. A variant of the so-called Ames strain had been implicated in the death of a Florida man from inhalational anthrax, and the university was nervous about security. But scientists in and out of government say the rush to destroy the spores may have eliminated crucial evidence about the anthrax in the letters sent to Congress and the media. If the mystery of its origins could have been solved, scientists might have been able to track the germ's distribution over the years. And that, in turn, might have given investigators important clues to the killer's identity. The FBI says it never explicitly approved nor objected to the destruction of the cultures. Quote, "We didn't recommend one way or another whether they should destroy it," unquote, said Larry Holmquist, a spokesman for the FBI in Omaha, Nebraska. So we will never know. And apparently this was destroyed. Skipping down, the Iowa State Archive was destroyed on October 10th and 11th. And it apparently held the cultures for decades until after the first anthrax bioterror attack on the United States. Did that come from Larry Creed Ford? Perhaps from the Al-Qaeda South African links? From the NPD? From the National Alliance? Or perhaps all of those. And again, we will take this subject up at greater length in the future. Bear in mind that there are evidentiary tributaries running between all of those organizations, and bear in mind the scenario presented in Serpent's Walk that I have outlined so many times, published by the National Vanguard Books of the publishing arm of the National Alliance. Now, I've alluded to other programs on the subject of 9/11 or related topics. Those are available from a CD and tape duplication service called Spitfire, one word, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email mail@spitfirelist.com. You can see annotated descriptions of the programs on the 9/11 and other subjects and the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. And sister station WFMU-FM is compiling the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word. And older programs are available for download only, including the vast bulk of the For the Record series at a longer URL, which has links both from the WFMU URL I just gave and from the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. That concludes Side 2 of For the Record 335, Walkin' the Snake Part 2, being recorded on November 11th, 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.